Hey guys, welcome to this week's episode of On the Horizon. This week we've got a very special guest, the Vanatic himself. We are with David Stroud. David Stroud is customer number one for us here at Horizon and the co-founder or co-originator of the 22 Creedmoor cartridge. So we talk all things 22 Creedmoor. I think you'll really enjoy this week's episode. This week's episode is going to be brought to you by Texas Ammunition. Texas Ammunition is our in-house ammunition distribution company, which also stocks and manufactures the 22 Creedmoor round, has it in stock. Check out their website, and I hope you enjoy this week's episode. David, thanks for being here with us.
Happy to be here.
So I want to start this podcast. A lot of people see on Horizon, we've got a whole series of rifles called the Vanatic Series rifles. And what most people don't know, some people do know, the guy there at Ace Hardware,
he knew
immediately. But, you know, where the Vanatic name came from, like for us, a lot of people don't know that you're basically customer one. And we've been working with you for, what has it been? 10 years now,
a little over 10 years.
And so we kind of took that Vanatic name from your Vanatic screen name. So tell us what really is a Vanatic.
Well, what happened was, you know, I was an avid deer hunter when I was young, got married. My wife knew I was a deer hunter. I think she didn't really think she could change me, but she didn't think it would be as bad as it was. But I think the first year we were married before we had kids, I think I spent 42 days deer hunting. And we have long deer hunting. It was in Mississippi. Well, my wife is an avid, you know, just she does cross. In fact, it's like drinking coffee to her. She's going to drink her coffee and she's going to do her crossword puzzle. So one morning she just leaned around and said, "You're a Vanatic." And I was like, "What is that?" And she goes, "Go look it up." And so I went and looked it up, and it was a person who's involved in sports or it does sporting events or hunting. And I think it's a Latin word that's spun off of venison.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a Latin word. Anyway, so I said, "Well, yep, that's me," you know. And so then when the internet came around and I got on a forum, I think the first one that I used that Vanatic was on the Predator Masters hunting forum.
Oh, wow.
And so that's where it got started. And everybody, so I just kept using that same screen
name.
What year
time frame?
Oh, gosh, 1999.
Oh, wow.
Somewhere around in there. And 2000, right around 99, 2000. And so everybody on that website and a lot of the predator hunting world, they knew it was Vanatic. And I've had many people come up to me and say, "What does that mean?" And I always tell them the same thing. Go look it up.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, when you'd said that to us and we looked it up, and I was like, "Oh, man, this is the perfect word." And I'm surprised, outside of your screen name, you don't see it that much.
You don't see it that often.
Yeah. And so it's fun to see, you know, that kind of circle, and that's why we chose that name for those for those rifles. And so the other thing people don't know or may know, if you go back and look at our YouTube channels, it's been several years back, but you're kind of the reason we started doing the 22 Creedmoor.
Yeah, well, you and I got together, and the 6.5 was beginning. That's how. Let me go back a little bit. I don't know if you remember this. So I have a really good customer who depends on me for all of his. I help him with his ammo and his guns, and he approached me about. He said, "I've got this rifle, and I want to make it into a 6.5 284." And I said, "Man, I don't know that. That's a Remington Model 7.
Oh yeah.
And so I put it on Texas Hunting Forum, and you sent me a private message. You had just gotten back into College Station and opened a little shop, and so I said, "Well, he wants to build this," and we both said the same thing. He should just build the new 6.5 Creedmoor. He should make a Creedmoor. And so I finally went back to him. I said, "You know, Gunsmith and I both agree that you should make this into a Creedmoor." And he goes, "No, I want the speed of the 284. And I said, "Look, this, with the bullet weights that you're wanting to shoot, it's going to be too long for that." I said, "Try the Creedmoor. If you don't like the gun, I'll buy it from you." And so you built that first gun, and we've been going ever since then. And he still has that gun to this day, and that's his favorite gun. So.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but anyway.
Well, that was – and the 6.5 really kind of came on, what has that been, 2009, 10, yep, kind of that time frame. And this, and, man, on the forums,
it was just starting to catch on, you know. And but anyway,
well, I remember on the forums getting ripped so much about trying to promote the 6.5 Creedmoor because everybody said, you know, it's just a 260, it's just a 260
or 6.5. Yeah, been around forever, 6.5 by 55 Swedish Mauser, been around since the 1890s.
Yeah.
You know what? You just reinventing the way, but no, there was something unique about the Creedmoor,
and there was something crazy. I was listening to the Hornady podcast, and I believe Seth said something like it was now at 6.5 Creedmoor and more rounds or have been produced for that round than any other round in history.
Well, I've told this story a lot. I don't know if I've ever told it to you, but I've been reloading since 1977. I have a 1973 rock chucker that I still have.
You still use?
I use it for some stuff, but not no. I have all kinds of presses now. I don't even know how. I got 9 or 10 presses. I don't know. But I've been doing it a long time, and the Creedmoor did something I had never seen happen before. It created, because Hornady was unique, and they put out the data, reloading data, H4350, immediately created a shortage. I've never seen that before. It created a shortage of powder. You could not buy H4350. In fact, all my original loads for it were all different kinds of powder.
Because you couldn't find it.
I was playing around with different things because you couldn't find 4350 at the time because everybody was loading it in their Creedmoor. So anyway, that's pretty interesting that I don't think any other cartridge has ever done anything like that.
Yeah, no. And I mean, it's funny you say that because when we kind of started the 22 Creed, we were looking at starting with 4350, but there wasn't any.
Yeah, there wasn't any. And so I started playing around, and I'm trying to remember Vitaveri 160, 165. But then they came out with the Magic Unicorn Dust stuff, the Reloader 26. And I started getting speeds that were even above. Of course, I had no idea that I was probably running 70-plus PSI. Because the brass, I was using Lapua small rifle brass. It was 6.5 brass neck down.
Yep.
And,
it was
hiding pressure. But I shot that, as funny as I shot that original barrel out of my gun about 1,000 rounds with Reloader 26 with a load that was probably running 70,000 PSI with no problems until we found out it was 70. I was like, whoa, I backed off, backed off a grain and powder.
And really, the only issue that we saw with the 26 was that carbon ring.
And the only other thing that when we first originally started, and I remember coming to you saying, we need to get some full-length dies, get away from all the bushing dies, size necking it down in two stages and that, because I was getting a lot of donut problems also.
Yep.
And so those were issues that when we first started.
I don't know. You probably remember. We saw, it was funny, I was on the 22 Creedmoor Facebook group, which is growing, pretty crazy every week. Somebody asked on there, what do you think about fire forming 22-250? And do you remember
I remember the phone. I remember calling you, and we were talking. I said, man, I've got this 22-250 Lapua brass. And I said, I wonder if we could do something with that. And I'd already run it in a die. Of course, it didn't even touch. Because basically what a 22 Creedmoor is almost an Ackley.
Yep.
You Ackley out the walls and the shoulders. And you got on the phone with your friend. And he said, yeah, it works. He said, I just shot one, and it worked. And so I immediately loaded up a box of 50 and went to range and shot them all. The only problem was the short necks.
Yeah.
The necks were too short.
Well, so we were worried about basically the
erosion.
Yeah,
I didn't want to burn out the throat with a waste. And they don't grow because of the 35-degree shoulder. They don't grow that fast.
But in a pinch.
Oh, yeah. You can just shoot 22-250 in a pinch if you had to. But
not recommending.
I wouldn't recommend it, but it sure works.
So, when you look at the 22 Creed, we get this question all the time. And you mentioned on chamber pressure, there is some crazy reload data out there
try to get on the line and see. I see people shooting 80 grain bullets out of 21 inch barrels at 3,600 feet per second. I'm going, there's no way that's not high 70s, low 80s, maybe.
And
the guns are so well made and the brass is so strong, just especially with the small rifle primer stuff.
I think one thing that like I say here, we do have some really good reference material. If you go to 22creedmoor.com, there's some reference stuff that Peterson did. So you can see those pressure chambers.
Yep. But Hodgson's got data out there. And if if you're getting some of the extreme speeds that you see out there, and that was one of the people, some people have been disappointed because they're thinking, you know, I'm going to load these 75 grain bullets at 3,600 feet per second.
Yeah.
And no.
Yeah.
No, and a 26, 28 inch barrel with certain, you know, there's, yep. You can get close, but
you really do want to keep that chamber pressure under, I think we run 64,000 in our Texas ammo, yeah. You know, you really probably want to be closer to 60,000.
Yeah. Mid to low 60s.
And the other thing we play with quite a bit that I want to address is the twist rate, you know. And so we kind of landed on the 8 twist.
Yeah.
One thing that we do see, I almost texted you the video. There was a guy on the Creedmoor forum. And he had a thermal, and he was shooting this coyote and basically missing this coyote as he was kind of going across the pasture. And about his fifth round in, you could see the bullet, you know, tracked off a couple hundred yards high. I mean, it looked like it just sort of exploded and went off. And I messaged the guy, just, you know, he's like, what happened here? You know, what do people think? And he was running a 7 twist, yeah. Running close to 3,600 with a 75. And working with, you know, talking with some of the guys at Hornady on the bullet specifically, that they're, you know, more or less spinning that bullet apart.
And in the heat, that's the key to that was the fourth or fifth shot.
Yeah.
Because I've seen that before, and I've told you the story about 28 Nosler when I was running it hot and heavy and with the 180 grain match bullets. And it would, when you got the barrel really hot, you had about a 50-50 chance of the third or fourth shot. If you shot them too fast, they would come apart.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, on
those fat 1-8 twist, 28
when
miles,
they get hot.
Yeah, you get hot, you can, and I could see that. And that's why I think the ideal, I mean, for the bullet weight that we're trying to shoot, the 75s, 80, 85s, I think 7.5, 7.75.
Yeah.
You know, it's 1-8. 1-8, again, I mean, all you're really losing in the 1-8, to me, that's why I think that's the optimum.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may not be optimizing your BC to the degree, but, you know, does it really matter if you're shooting coyotes or deer inside of 400 yards?
Right.
Not really. If you're shooting 1,000 yards, yeah.
And you got to, but the hardest thing about it, and why, you know, the 22 Creed is really, I'm going to call it a fringe cartridge, right? So you really want that stability number, like you're talking about, yeah. To get the full BC. But at the same time, you've got to keep a maximum amount of RPM so the jackets don't come apart. And I think a lot of people you see will say, oh, well, you know, just shoot a solid copper or just shoot a whatever. And yeah, you may be able to get away with that with a hunting bullet to hold together, but not necessarily the safest way to approach that.
Yeah, I don't know how some of the copper bullets, I mean, for what we're using it for, where we're shooting a lot of rounds at coyotes and predators, I mean, copper bullets get kind of pricey too.
Yeah, that's true. So talking about that, when, you know, we were talking earlier, sometime, we're going to get the exact dates, but in 2012, 2014, we start messing with the 22 Creed, we get that kind of going, you know, where do you see this cartridge in terms of most effectiveness? I know, you know, you guys you yourself and the guys on your hunting predator team are all shooting 22
Well,
Crees.
It was funny that this happened. It just coincidence, really. You know, I wasn't really into shooting in these coyote competitions. I didn't do that. I just like to go hunt coyotes. Yeah. I wanted something because I was hunting in big open, up in North Texas where I had big open fields and there was easily getting 400 and 500 yard shots if I wanted to try to make them.
Yeah.
So I kind of envisioned myself doing that, you know, not really. I mean, you don't really get them. You're trying to call them in.
Yeah, yeah.
But when they hang and they're on those fields up there, it's easy to get 300, 400, 500 yard shots and the wind's always blowing.
Yeah.
So I was thinking of a high BC, heavy bullet. But then when you go into at that time, when I got into these competitions, everybody was shooting 243s, 25-06s, 22-50s. Not as much 22-50s because you don't see anybody hardly using 223s because when you're in a competition, you need them dead right there.
Yeah.
You know, you need to be able to find them quick and get on to the next spot. So
that delivered energy.
You wanted more energy on target. Plus the fact that, you know, you've also flat trajectory.
Yeah.
Because at night, sometimes you don't have time to range and all that. You just want to be able to, if you can see them in the lights, you just want to shoot them.
Yeah.
You know, quick. And so you want flat trajectory, high BC, heavy bullets with speed.
And then you got to be careful. So people say, oh, well, why not a 22 PRC or a 22 284?
Oh, that's way overboard. And I mean, you burn a lot of powder, and I mean, it's really nice being able to watch what happens, especially in thermals and too much recoil, too much powder. And it's a lot of, not much return there on all that extra powder you're burning.
Well, as we were seeing, we were watching some guys online trying to do 22 284s again. Man, that was done years ago, but you said,
this has been done.
You know, it's diminishing returns, and like we were talking about twist or spin. If you put more powder on it, you're going to spin it faster. The jacket's going to come apart faster.
And in fact, there's been there's a 22. I know the guy that did it. We're kind of old acquaintances from Predator Master days. Mm-hmm. I call it a red line, 22 red line, 6.5 SOM neck down to 22. But he was a pretty smart guy. He did not go down the 1-8 twist. He went 1-9 twist.
Okay.
And he, in other words, okay, I'm not shooting bigger than the 75 grain bullet.
Yep.
And he was getting he's up there around 4,000 feet per second.
But again, not spinning them so fast because he's changed the twist rate the other direction.
You had to slow the twist rate down to 9, 8, 9, 9.5, somewhere in that range to make that work. Because if you'd have went up to 8, you'd have, and especially if you're trying to run a suppressor, you sure don't want to have a disintegrating on a suppressor.
Hey guys, have you found that finding hunting ammo the last couple of years has been incredibly difficult? Let me let you in on a little secret. Check out TexasAmmunition.com. Texas Ammunition has a wide variety of pistol and rifle cartridges, some of your favorite hunting rounds, including our specialized 22 Creedmoor, great pricing, easy to get, quick shipping. Check them out at TexasAmmunition.com and you'll be super happy you did. Now, back to the show. So how would you answer the question? I'm sure you get it, why the 22 Creedmoor instead of like a 22-250 Ackley?
Well, in fact, it was funny that you say that because we talked about that. Yeah. I told you, man, all this, the donuts in the neck and necking down the 6.5. And then about that time, the 6mm Creedmoor hit the market. So we started using that brass, but we're still having donuts from taking. And I said, well, we just need some full-length size dies. You got together with Whitten and the rest is history. And I've been going with them ever since.
Well, now you can get, it's so easy now.
Oh, yeah.
Because you can get brass from Alpha or Peterson or Hornady.
And I've told you this story, but I had a friend call me. This has been about a year ago. He called me and he said, hey, what about a 220 Swift in a 1-7.5 twist barrel? You know, wouldn't it do about the same as a Creedmoor? And I went, well, yes. And this is when I knew we were mainstream. He goes, I said, well, why would you want to do that? It's hard to get 220 Swift brass, and
it doesn't feed very well.
Yeah, it does. I mean, why would you? He said, well, I want something different, and everybody and his brother now has a 22 Creedmoor.
I love it. That's good. That's a good thing.
I knew we had arrived.
Well, it was kind of funny to see, talking about your Predator competitions. I would know when you guys were winning. It felt like, I don't know, we grew up in a small town that had a flat track, race car track. And you always, the guy that won, you could buy his motor or whatever, to keep the competition. And so it would be interesting. On Monday, we would get a call about 22 Creedmoors. Like, oh, Dave and Kyle and them must have won a competition because it seemed like everybody started looking at what you guys were doing. And
Well, I even got a message from one of my buddies in Utah I hunted with. Tom Austin sent me. He said, man, you're on PETA's website. And the little blurb, he said, man, you ought to sue him. And I was like, no, it doesn't even have my name, but it had my picture. And it said something to the effect, we interviewed this hunter, and he's saying his 22 Creedmoor is not very fur friendly. And it wasn't. There was some ugly looking coyotes laying there, and that guy, I didn't know he was with PETA when he came up there and started talking to me. So I started bragging all about 22 Creedmoor and talking about hilarious. Well, it's not very fur friendly. If you're trying to say fur, this is not what you want.
That's hilarious. Well, and going to that point, you talk about needing to put delivered energy, you know, because of the tournaments. Yep.
Yep. So you don't know, a lot of times you don't know what angle you're going to have to, you know, they start burning out of there. You want to be able to get them no matter what.
You know, what's interesting, and I don't think I set my timer at the right time for our 22 questions. So we're going to be a little late for that. But the I want to catch this piece. When I go to these shows and we start talking about the 22 Creedmoor, we're talking about predator hunting, it surprises me how many states or people who are not familiar with the predator hunting contest world. And it seems like because of the big bobcat contest and stuff, Texas is sort of the hub for a lot of that.
Yeah, that's the largest in the world by far. I mean, 600 teams and that entire, it's crazy.
So for people who are not familiar with, you know, we talk about this predator hunting contest. Oh, I contest.
Think I misquoted. I think it was maybe. It is 600. I know it's in the high threes and fours every time, 400 teams. Well,
I think there's...
But a big event around here in our part of the world, locally, not counting Big Bobby, is, you know, 100 teams.
That's a lot of teams.
So you're talking five, six, seven times, or six times the number of teams in the Big Bobcat. But other, when you're saying around the country, is a lot of states now are, you know, outlawing it because of public land. And yeah. I can understand that. You know, they don't want to have contests and raising money on hunting predators on... I can understand that.
Yeah.
I can, but I don't know what'll happen in Texas down the road because everything's private here. Everybody's hunting private land. There's nobody hunting public land.
Well, when you think of it, so for somebody who's never heard of a predator tournament, what's the normal format? How many man teams? And what does that look like?
The standard now is pretty much it'll only allow you four man teams.
Okay.
And we do a three man team, but, and now you can have a designated driver. You can only have four shooters.
So you can have four people shooting and a designated driver?
Yeah, you can have, our landowner driver can ride around with you. You just can't call and shoot. A lot of them do that. There's two basic formats that they've kind of evolved to. One's called a stringer hunt, which my partner actually claims he invented that. He came up with that idea. Brett said, yeah, and so... That's where you just get one of each species, bobcat, coyote, fox, and raccoon, and you add the weights up, and whoever brings in the most weight. So you still shoot them a few more because you're trying to cull to get get the biggest animal you can find in each species.
And all of them have to be culled?
Yes. Yeah. Although now there was a tournament I was in last year, and they said, well, you know, we want to start using thermal. Nobody was using thermal back in...
Well, before, like, I don't think you were allowed to for a couple of years.
No, we never used... I mean, you rarely saw thermal, and then it's catching on, and well, they want more participation. Mm-hmm. So they're saying, well, we want to use thermal, which... In a way, turns it from a calling contest. They're not calling contests. Most of them are not anymore.
Spotting.
They're all about spotting and just, you know, and most of the time you do lip squeak or something to get them to stop or look at you. But no, it's not. They're shooting contests and they're just riding around and spotting with thermals. And it's kind of gotten away from the calling contest, which is a shame. I mean, it's supposed to be about calling them.
Yeah.
And when I first started, I would go to these properties, and I never told the landowner this, but if I was just out riding around and saw a coyote, I wouldn't shoot it. I would go set up and try to call it in because it was all about calling them up.
Yeah, and you are or have been sponsored by Fox Pro for a long time.
Yeah, I've been on Fox Pro Post staff for a while. They're good people.
Man,
good
people. And I don't know if I probably can't talk about it here, but I saw their new call.
Oh, yeah,
oh my goodness, it looks awesome.
They're always and that you can tell it's orientated a little bit toward contest because they're putting a scale in their remote.
And that was pretty smart. Super, super awesome. Being told that's our marker for our 22 questions. So I'm
going to. Yeah, this is something this I didn't know about. You didn't warn me about this.
Well, I try not to warn you about it. So here's kind of what we do. So at the 22 minute mark, we've got 22 just kind of get to know you questions. It's something that we like to do to incorporate the 22 Creedmoor. So it'll be 22 and fast.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. What's your favorite animal to hunt?
Oh, coyote by far.
Okay. Favorite caliber?
22 Creedmoor.
Oh, there we go. Okay. I should have known that one. Your favorite call to use for predators?
Baby cottontail. You're talking about
if
like
you're
the sound?
Yeah.
Baby cottontail.
Okay. What is the coolest gear that you've seen in the last year?
Oh, coolest gear. That's a tough one. Coolest year. I guess I'm going to go with the new Fox Pro with the scale in the remote control.
I think that's super smart.
That's pretty.
Hopefully cool, it'll total up the weight. So then at the end of the tournament, you know exactly what you did.
Yeah.
What's your favorite fast food restaurant?
Fast food. Cane's.
Oh, geez. I'm such a Lane's fan. I'm not a Cane's fan here. Aggieland, you can't go to Cane's. So what's your favorite trophy you've ever taken?
Oh, well, you know that. Oh,
I know.
I know of a certain 8-point.
Yeah, David may have a Texas State record 8-point taking low fence.
Well, gross 180 and 6/8 and netted 175 and 7/8.
Biggest 8-point.
Biggest 8-point on record right now in Texas.
So
broke the old record from 1996.
And you rattled that deer in.
Rattled him up, shot him at, I could have shot him with a bow, 30 yards.
That's awesome.
But I had my 6.5 PRC sighted in, you know, with my 25 power scope and had to shoot him at 25, 30 yards.
That's awesome. Beach or mountains?
Mountains for sure.
Are you
my wife is the beach person. I'm the mountain person.
So do you do both?
That's why we never go on vacation.
Are you a European mount or a shoulder mount guy?
Shoulder mount.
Okay. If you're going on a hunt, what's one survivor item you're always taking with you?
One survivor item. Knife.
Okay. All right. That's fair. What are three words that describe your hunting style?
Oh, fast-paced.
Perfect. Fast. You got one fast-paced. More.
I got one more word. Yeah. I'm going to save that for later.
There we go. What's your favorite camo pattern?
Oh, that's another good one. I don't... you know what? I want to say just... solids.
Really?
I like browns. In fact, there's a company that I've been buying some stuff from, and they don't have a camo pattern.
It's just brown.
Just brown.
There you go.
Just browns and greens. I wore some camo this year, some of the Cabela's camo pants, but for the most part, I just wear brown. Browns and muted colors.
There you go. And it obviously works. What's your favorite sports team to watch?
I'm not much of a watcher.
Even though you played college football.
I played, but I'm not much of a sports fan. My wife is. I guess I watch a little bit of college football, but okay. Not a lot.
So what's one? Well, yeah, that's crazy because you played and your son played.
And my son played. But like I said, I'm just not much of a spectator. I want to go do it.
I've
been invited to the Masters golf tournament, and I would rather go play golf than go to the Masters.
Oh, there you go. What's one thing in your hunting pack that doesn't belong there?
In my hunting pack that doesn't belong there. Can't think of anything. I'm pretty minimalist. It doesn't belong there.
I gotta assume that as much as you reload, you've got multiple different loads of different.
Oh well, it's like that. Right over here, I brought my load from my 22 Creedmoors, and there's three different loads in there.
in the same package.
Yeah, I'm bad about because I'm always experimenting. You asked me what powder I was using the other day. And
yeah,
I said H1000. No, not that was last week. This week it's Reloader 23.
You taking a spot and scope or binos?
Binos. Okay. I just recently switched. Yeah, I mean I have both. But I've gotten to on the tripod, and this is from PRS shooting, mm-hmm. which is kind of my latest little fun adventure. Shooting the 22 rimfire and the PRS style NRL style matches, and the binocular, the 15 power binoculars are the way to go for that.
Awesome. Are you a what's your favorite hunting snack?
Something with peanut butter in it.
Okay, I like that. I agree with that. Solo or guided hunts?
Oh, I would do the solo. I've soloed caribou, you know, I've killed a caribou in Alaska, and it was a solo hunt. Just hired a bush pilot, drop us off with our recurves, and go hunting.
Awesome. I totally agree. And I think this is going to be an easy one for you. You prefer hand loads or factory ammo?
I'm sure I have, But I don't think I've ever killed anything with a factory load. I probably have. I'm pretty sure I've had, but I bet you I could count on a half of one hand how many animals I've killed with a factory load.
That is crazy.
I've been reloading. When I was young, it was funny. I was an avid deer hunter, but I couldn't for a long time because we didn't have as many deer back then.
Yeah.
I could not kill a deer. It took me a long time to kill my first deer. But in fact, I think I only killed one buck with a gun before I started bow hunting. And I was killing more with a bow. And for 12 years, I didn't hunt with a gun. I just hunted with a bow.
That's crazy. So what, if you had to be any animal, what would you be?
Oh, I'm going to go with a coyote.
Okay. All right. I didn't know.
I mean, as they say, at the end of time, there will only be cockroaches and coyotes.
Exactly.
I don't want to be a cockroach.
Yeah, that's fair. What's your favorite wild game dish?
We have a recipe that we call Mississippi pot roast.
Okay.
And you put some elk, you know, some type of elk meat or any wild game, you know, in that and make that pot roast. That's pretty good stuff. That's one of my favorites.
Awesome. What's the last book you've read?
Last book. Ooh. It was, let me think a minute. There's a book laying, there's what called, I'd have to look on my phone, that my wife just, she bought a book the other day. It's The Last Ride.
Okay.
About a lady from back in the 60s. Whose husband died, and she just went and bought a horse and rode all the way from Maine to California. And I'm supposed to start reading that.
She's trying to tell you something?
My wife, no. She just anyway, it's a neat read. I guess because I've heard she's read me part of the book as we were driving in New Mexico the other day. She started reading me portions of the book.
Awesome.
She said, "You've got to read this book." And but anyway,
that's
close enough.
So are you when in taking water, are you a Nalgene bottle kind of guy or Camelback kind of guy?
Oh, I'm plastic sure. Bottle.
And then obviously our last question always is, have you shot a 22 Creedmoor? And you pretty much helped invent the 22 Creedmoor, so I think you have shot it plenty.
Yeah. I burned my first barrel. It took me like 5 years, but as people always say, well, you know, hey, I said, think about it. I had 5 years of shooting coyotes and a lot of deer. I shot a lot of deer and a lot of pigs. That was a lot of fun out of that barrel. And because I didn't play with it too much. I did have to experiment at the beginning. Yep. You know, I probably shot a few hundred rounds trying to find the right powder. But once I settled on that reloader 26 load at that point in time, and it's funny, I don't even use Reloader 26 anymore because I'm not trying to chase the nth degree of speed. But if you're trying to chase that speed, probably Reloader 26 is the way to go.
So that's a really good segue into kind of what I wanted to talk about next. So, you know, I don't know that I've ever met anybody who's reloaded as much as you or as long as you have. I mean, I think you were telling me you still have some Hodgkin like collectible powder and brown sacks, right?
I've never seen one before. I have a bottle of Hodgson powder that this was their first containers they made after they just quit selling it out in brown paper bags. I got it from a guy in Mississippi who lived in Shawnee Mission, Kansas. He ran the Sears Roebuck department back when Sears closed. And he gave me these cans of powder, and I'd never seen anything like that. I still have one. One of them, I left the powder in it, and the powder ate it.
Oh, geez.
It's made out of cardboard, and it dissolved it. So, but yeah, I have some, a lot. I have reloading data from I have the mimeograph. I don't know if y'all know what mimeograph paper is. So I got mimeograph paper that the Hodgson's handed out in 1956.
Jeez.
So I was 1 year old.
Where'd you find that at?
Oh, that same guy. He gave it to me. He said he found out I was a reloader, and he was running a little appliance store in Pearl, Mississippi. And I was probably in my early 30s, and he was in his late 60s. So he took me to his house, and he gave me all this stuff. He said, man, I haven't used this stuff. But he said, yeah, I used to drive over to the Hodgson place and pick it up in paper sacks.
So, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like to the actual facility?
Yeah, to the actual facility, and they just give it to you in a brown paper bag.
So have you ever used that load data off the mimeograph paper?
No, because, well, no. No, I haven't. I have to admit. But there's load data on there, and it says, you know, it'll have asterisk. It says by Jack O'Connor.
Oh, geez.
Or, you know, some of the famous people at that time. Yeah. Because some of that, and there was some powder on there that I've, like, 7626 powders I've never heard of.
That's
amazing. Because a lot of this stuff was, you know, just they came out with a designation, I guess, because it was military powder.
That's
so
crazy.
They pulled down powder that they ground up. Some of I've read, I don't know this for a fact, but they was like 20 millimeter cannon powder that they
ground up
and they just came and they would play with it and work up loads.
That's
because, basically back then, a lot of people flew by the seat of their pants on that. They just work up real slow and be safe. And
So, I know there's a lot of stuff that come out really in the last, maybe the last couple months with a lot of the data that Hornady's been putting out. A lot of really good stuff there. I've listened to those podcasts multiple times. But when you go to create your loads, what is your process? Let's say we create a new caliber tomorrow and it's a 22 David Stroud.
You know what weight bullet you want, and you know what diameter, you know, the bullet is, and you just have to come up with a burn rate that kind of fits, and then you play around. And that's what, when the 22 Creedmoor, I was like, well, I know I need something slower. I think I started out with the slower burning powders because you can always there's always something to compare it to. I was comparing it to the 22 243.
Okay.
And there was already some information out there. And
do you use quick load still, or is that?
I have quick load. I've used it a little bit, but and that's a good reference to pull it off of quick load. And you can design. I'm not good enough on a computer to design my own case. I have friends that are. I can't design my own case, and I'm just not that good with a computer and on quick load. I haven't tried to do that, but what I did back then was there was 22 250. Fast twist, Ackley fast twist data in data books. I think it was in one of the old Sierra manuals. I can't remember which manual it was, but I looked that up, and of course they stopped at like 70 grain bullet, round nose bullet. So I just kind of used that and said, okay, I see here that they're using slower, like 4831 powders. But this is old data.
I mean, 4831 shortcut. I was looking back the other day. I used that for a long time.
That's a solid powder. And, 4350 to me, when I tried it, that it was a little spiky and it jumped up pressures before my speed got up to where I was. And I'd already discovered that Reloader 26 was doing really well. But another powder that a lot of people, one of the powders I first started with was the 4000 MR, which is in that same burn rate speed, in there with H1000 and 26 and all that. And that worked really well for me.
So you got a powder charge and you got a bullet you want to shoot.
Yeah.
What's
and Hornady kind of backed us up in one of their podcasts is I've always been a believer. If you find a bullet your gun likes, you can put just about any powder in there and make it, within reason.
Yeah.
And if it likes that bullet, you can usually swap around. And every once in a while, you'll get something that you can change powders and make it a little better. Or it might be a little, if you don't have the right powder, it might shoot a little bit. But generally speaking, if it doesn't like that bullet, you can play with powders to the end of until you run out of powders, and you're still not going to get anything you're happy with. I think the bullet Hornady said that. They said it. Get a bullet and a powder, and if it doesn't like that, you can change powders. But I found that changing if it doesn't like that bullet,
just not going to do it.
Yeah, it's probably not going to do it.
Well, I think there's a lot of things going on. People don't realize on the gun side, it seems as easy as you just take this barrel and you put it on this action and go with it. But between reamers, the amount of times you've used that reamer, we see even the barrels themselves, they're manufactured in the same facility, same deal, but different chunk of steel. This one's lapped a little longer than the next one.
I've told this story. I think I told it as recent as yesterday. Is you made a friend of mine two identical 28 nozzlers. I mean, it's close to, I mean, they came right down
the behind rep, each other. Yeah,
right behind each other, same brand barrel, same. These were two identical guns. They looked just alike. We took them to the range. We loaded up some 175 grain ELDXs with Rotumbo and
23.
And we took them down to the range, and the guy who got them, one of them was going to go to a friend and one of them was going to be his. And we shot them, and one of them was 150 feet per second faster than the other.
That's crazy.
Of course, these are new barrels. Yeah, they may have evened out over time. And I asked him, because they both shot fantastic. Yeah. And I said, well, which one are you going to pick? Like, joking, I was like, of course, I'm going to pick the fast one.
Exactly.
And so anyway, but that's just to show you, you never know.
Hey guys, so you're listening to the On the Horizon podcast. We can't go a full podcast without talking about Horizon Firearms. So when you're looking for your next custom rifle, be sure and check us out at horizonfirearms.com. We look forward to doing business with you. Now, back to the show. Is it just go out and shoot a bunch of groups, or do you do any kind of ladder test?
I've done the ladder testing, and I played, and you know, going and it, ladder testing. What I do is ladder testing when you got like something like a 22 Creedmoor, you don't know where to start.
Yeah.
You have no data, so you basically have to do a ladder test. You have to start low and work
up. So you're doing that more to catch where your pressures are
right.
coming up.
I'm trying to see, and I've read the stuff about, you know, you hit these flat spots and you can chronograph them. And I have a lab radar. I chronograph just about everything over time. And in fact, that was something that I've learned since I've gotten, I read about it and I didn't know if it was true or not, is that do barrels speed up?
Yep.
Well, yes, they do.
Yep.
Absolutely. Because if you're chronographing all the time, then you know that. Now, back in the day, the chronographs that I had a chronograph since 1980.
Like a pro crony?
Oh, gosh. No, this was made in somebody's garage. And I still have it up in the attic. I need to dig it out. It's an antique for sure. It's made in on the coast of a guy that lived on in one of the little towns on the coast of Mississippi. And he advertised in the NRA magazine, a little blurb in there. And I bought it for like $150 or something. But it worked, but it was very, you know, you could go to the range and with this load and it might shoot 3,000 this week and 32 the next week. It just, depending on which way angle the sun was hitting.
You ought to get it out and like your magneto, your lab, and just see what the
No, I've tried the lab radar up against the different, you know, those lab radar and the magneto speed.
Yeah.
Those both are very accurate.
I almost called you yesterday. We love the lab. We switched over to those just because it seemed like the magneto speed, we got some point of impact shift, you know.
You're going to get that. And that's why I got away from it, because if you're trying to, it saves ammo.
Yep,
They're both going to give you good data, but it saves you ammo when you don't have to retweak it after you take the lab.
So we're usually, when we're going to the range, we're running two lab radars. And, you know, just because sometimes one doesn't catch or whatever. And I almost called you yesterday. When we get down here, I may show you. Jay, our guy shooting yesterday, got the strangest error I've ever seen. It's some kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, some kind of weird error on the lab on this one. And then like two shots later, the other one. And I can't get either of them to read anything, but it's got this like really bizarre code. Please call the manufacturer. So I don't know. We sent them back to have them updated, and I'm wondering if we got some software glitch.
Oh, that's a Chinese balloon effect.
That's what it feels like, because I'm like, I used them 24 hours ago, and everything worked perfectly. But now both of them, I've got some bizarre error. So we'll take a look at that when we get down. Now, one thing I want to talk a little bit about, so this 22 long rifle competition stuff. And I know you and I have talked and trying to get Ryder all pumped up to do that. So tell me how you got into that. I decided to get more into
competition long range PRS style shooting. So I took a little class,
which is a little intimidating.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And but it's a lot of fun, and I just like to do stuff, you know.
Yeah.
I went to a class recently, and the guy said, well, everybody get up and tell why you're here. So I said, well, I'm here to shoot up some ammo so I can go home and reload more, because that's my hobby, is reloading ammo. So if I don't shoot, I can't reload anymore. I got into it, you know, and I needed a left-handed, on short notice, I needed a left-handed, some type of rifle that would be good for PRC. And I found one, a left-handed Bagheera and 6.5 Creedmoor, and shot this class with it, intending maybe to rebarrel at some point, which I will rebarrel it. The gun's got 1,200, 1,400 rounds on it now.
Nice.
And so I'll probably rebarrel it here pretty soon. Well, then I found out they made left-handed Bagheera trainer rifle 22s. And I said, oh, that would be awesome to practice with. You know, so I got that.
Those are hard to get.
Very hard. I had to get one with a carbon fiber barrel because I couldn't get one with a steel barrel. But anyway, I finally got my hands on one. Oh my gosh, they're so much fun. There's nothing better than, it'll make you smile, is sitting down and shooting a steel target at 300 or 400 yards, and you go, pew, and then dink, about 4 seconds later. That's and awesome. It's pretty amazing what you can do with those little 22s, and they have local matches around near where I live, and I started going and playing those, and they're just a lot of fun.
And you're setting those guns up just like your
I've got a $900 rifle with a $3,000 scope on it.
That's
so
awesome.
There you go.
That's awesome. So what is the at 500 yards, let's say 400 yards with that 22, how much drive are you talking about?
Oh, wow. I got it.
And then you just dialing down.
Yeah, you just dial. I mean, it's probably, well, the first scope I put on there originally, it only had 18 mils of elevation after I sighted in. And that would get you to 350.
Whoa.
You couldn't get to 4. You had to do holdover to get to 4.
So you're running out of elevation.
So, yeah, you're running out of elevation. That's with a 30 MOA.
Jeez.
So I still have the same 30 MOA, but now my scope has, after it's sighted in, the scope I have on it now has 32 mils up. I can go up. So that'll get me over 500 yards.
But now you're really playing with wind.
Oh, yeah. It's very difficult. Yeah,
how big is the target at 500?
Well, I mean, I haven't shot in any competitions. I just took it out and shot at a standard size, IPSC target at 400 and 500 yards. 4 is pretty doable. 5 is pretty hard.
That's awesome.
Any little puff of wind. What's really amazing is watching. You can get up there and you can get, if your scope and the sun is just right, you can actually watch your bullet coming in out of the sky and it's bending the wind. It's just and it comes in at a curve, hit the steel. It's pretty amazing.
So have you learned anything doing the 22 long rifle that has helped you on your center fire side?
Trigger. I mean, you have to, your trigger pull and that type of thing. You really have to be, none of that snatching the trigger off when you're, you have to work on your, in fact, it's actually helpful to do it with a 22 what's really nice about that is you can practice all these positions and get up there, and you don't have to worry about the rifle kicking and all that. You can just practice lots and lots of repetition and not shoot up a lot of ammo.
So what are you going to do with this 6GT we just finished?
Oh, can't wait to get it out there and try a PRS match. We got two matches each month that I can go to.
What are you loading for that one?
We'll start with 105 Burger hybrids and go from there.
That's a standard, super heavy, big, long barrel.
Oh, yeah. I picked the gun up a while ago, and I said, it's pretty heavy. I said, when I put those extra weights on it, I can probably get a little heavier, up to about 22, 23 pounds.
So I guess so that way you can just see it.
I was surprised. I thought a 28-inch barrel on it, because I've never ran anything longer than 24. Yeah. I thought it was going to look longer than that. Yeah. It doesn't look.
The chassis is pretty long.
Yeah, that chassis. MDT chassis is pretty long.
So kind of last question I'll ask you before I ask you the last question. So give me your perfect coyote set. So you're going into a new area and that you don't know if it's been called or not been called, but you know there's coyotes there. And we're sitting here in March. So coming into the mating season.
Yeah, they're paired up now.
So how are you calling tonight?
Oh, well, I mean, we're going with the, I mean, again, most of these contests, if you're in a contest, it just depends on what every situation's a little bit different. But if you're in a contest, you're going to, a friend of mine once told me, throw the widest net possible. Mm. So, I don't necessarily start with vocals or anything like that. I go with rabbit or bird, something that everything wants to eat. I mean, and that's why I said baby cottontail. There is nothing. I've called up roadrunners, there's nothing that doesn't eat baby cottontail. I mean, I don't see how many there's so many because everything, hawks, owls, I mean, the whole, so throw the widest net possible. So because you never know what's going to come in. So if you go with vocals, you're probably going to call up a coyote.
Right.
Well, what if there's a cat or a fox or whatever? So that's what I do. I just throw the widest net. So I'm going to go start off with some type of bird or baby cottontail every single time. So and I'll do that for about 5-6 minutes, and then I'll switch sounds. And then at this time of the year, I would definitely throw out some pup distress.
Okay.
And then I don't know if I should reveal my secret sound.
Don't
reveal
any secrets.
I don't know. I better hold one secret sound.
Then you come back with your secret sound.
In fact, it worked this weekend. We've been sitting there for about 15. We were trying to call a cat, and we really weren't trying to get a coyote. But at the very end, we thought, I'm going to give one hint. So we decided to do something raccoon-related just to see if one was in the area. And I mean, it wasn't 15 seconds and a big male coyote just come boiling out with his hair all standing up.
No way.
So there you go. There's your, if you can figure it out from there.
So what, your total set before you're like, nope, there's not one, I'm going to leave. That's my problem. I always get impatient. How long are you in one spot before you're?
It just depends. If you're after coyotes, I think after kind of 16, 17 minutes, we're usually out of there. Cats, we might wait another 5 minutes or so.
So at most you're at 20 minutes and then moving a half mile?
Yeah, moving at least a half mile. If it's cats, you can do a little closer. And if the wind's blowing, like today, you could probably set up 20, 30 mile an hour winds, which I don't like to call in. But if you have to in a contest, you can move 400 or 500 yards because they can't hear you very far. You'd be surprised. I mean, that's a lot of people. You know, I've set up on coyotes before. I could see them, and they couldn't hear me.
That's crazy.
But it was high winds, always high winds.
Kind of with that, the last question I appreciate it. That's always intriguing to me because, like, I like to call, but it's like I think I get impatient of, man, should I move now? Should I not move? How far do I got to go? You know, because like you said,
we usually don't make many sets less than 12, 13 minutes.
Yeah.
I think I've read somewhere, and I don't know if it's true, but it's pretty much true. I think if nothing's happened in 8 minutes, your percentages just go way off.
Well, that's what you mentioned, seeing them. It's like that's been the disheartening thing for me with thermals. You'd be like, oh, there's a coyote. I'm going to set up and call him.
A lot of times they won't even pay attention.
Yeah, they don't seem to care. Then you're wondering if you're doing the right thing.
You can kind of throw some different sounds in it, and every once in a while you'll get. That's how you learn. Some sounds that really get them going.
Well, I think that was one thing that was crazy. We hunted someone with Jeff, the Predator Pursuit, you know, and we sat down, and it was like, it felt like every 2 or 3 minutes or just something. Nothing. And then finally, it's like we went through, it felt like 10 or 15 different sounds, then boom, there you go. You know, but it was just more trying a whole bunch of stranger sounds.
I'm not a big like jumper, right? That's why I have a friend that hunted with some people, and he said, "Yeah, those guys change sounds like every 30 seconds."
Yeah, it's crazy.
I don't do that. I'm a four. I bet I could probably just take six sounds and
be just.
I play the same six sounds pretty much all the time. Now every once in a while, I just throw up something different. I don't even know how many, 350 sounds, 400, I don't even know how many sounds I've got on mine.
Just download them all.
I've got them downloaded, and other people send them to me and things like that. So, and in fact, this past weekend, we called up two coyotes on a sound. I was like, what is this? I just hit it, and I was like, oh, that sounds pretty good. And boom, here comes your favorites. Hard charger, and I missed him running.
Oh, no. Well, so the way we like to end our podcast here is we like to ask everybody, what is on the horizon for you? So what is something you've got going that you're looking
forward
to?
Well, I got this new gun. I got the new 6GT. I'm going to start playing some PRS and, of course, the rimfire thing. And I want to get out. I would like to get out with your son as soon as possible. But also, I've got a granddaughter that just turned 10. She killed her first elk.
Hey.
And with a 6.5 Creedmoor in New Mexico this year. So I got grandkids that come up, and I've already got them in the reloading room.
That's fun.
Playing with me. And I actually had her, she's done a lot of stuff with me. She's sized down a lot of brass for me, but she's also pointed bullets for me. Like that. Of course, they think it's a game, you know. So I bought one of those little Lee brass deals that just preps brass.
Yeah.
And it looks like a toy. So I put that thing up right before Christmas, and they came over, and I had them fighting over playing. And I got probably like 4,000 pieces of 9mm brass, sized and cleaned, letting them play. They thought they were playing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, David, I appreciate it as always. Yeah, good to see you. I'm looking to see how this 6GT treats you.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it'll be fine. All of them so far have been.
Cool. Well, guys, thanks again for listening to another episode of On the Horizon Podcast. Be sure and check down below, like and subscribe. We need to see your feedback and let us know what kind of topics and stuff you'd like us to cover. And as always, we appreciate it. We'll catch you next time.